the University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and today we are in the splendiferous campus at McNichols next to the Gardella Honors House. And let me introduce to you our panel for today. All the way to my left, it's Professor Jim Tubbs.
Hello, hello. Beautiful day here.
Dan Maggio is here with us today.
Hi, Matt. Thanks.
Continuing from my left, Mara Livesey is here from Chemistry and Biochemistry.
Yes, hello.
We'll go over to my right side, and Professor Heather Hill is here.
Hello, everybody.
What's going on?
Well, it's nice to be back in the classroom, you
know? Absolutely. Professor Stephen Manning is here with us today.
Good afternoon.
We're happy to have Professor Jeff Boats here with us. And folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. You stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can find us on Facebook or Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. Hello, profs. It's been a while since I sent in some questions, and while pondering a topic for this set, I remember the old game of identifying novels based on their opening line. However, ooh, I said, too easy. So the following is a set of 15-second sentences famous books. Your goal is to remember, deduce, guess, or otherwise land on the book from its vice opening sentence. 80% is passing because I want a mug, dang it. All the best, as always, Nat Pike of Livonia, Michigan.
Thanks,
so thanks,
Nat,
for sending those questions in, Nat. That's cool. Great. All right. Holy smokes, here we go. This is going to be great. I can already tell. Some years ago, never mind how long precisely, having little or no money in my purse and nothing particular to interest me on the shore, I thought I would sail about a little and see the watery parts of the world.
Old Man of the Sea.
Moby Dick.
That's Moby Dick.
Oh.
That is right after the actual
call
first line.
Ishmael. By the way,
call me
we could do audience participation.
Yes.
Yeah, we are getting a lot of feedback.
Yes, please help, audience.
We are getting a lot
please
of
help,
here.
Please.
Please help.
Please.
Help me. Here is the second quote, or the second line. In the bed of the river, there were pebbles and boulders, dry and white in the sun, and the water was clear and swiftly moving, and blue in the channels.
Whew. That almost sounds like Hemingway.
It is Hemingway.
Oh.
But what book?
Sun Also Rises?
Mm-mm.
For Whom the Bell Tolls?
I haven't heard it yet. The actual first line is, in the late summer of that year, we lived in a house in a village that looked across the river and the plain to the mountains.
The Snows of Kilimanjaro?
Mm-mm.
Nope. Is that a Nick Adams story? Could be a Nick
very
Adams.
Famous Hemingway.
Why are we...
A Farewell to Arms?
It's A Farewell to Arms.
Farewell. Yeah,
yeah, it is A Farewell to Arms. I wondered whether somebody might start flapping their arms in the audience or something. It's pretty close, pretty close.
And first line, did you read the first line?
He did.
I did.
He did, okay.
In the late summer of that year, that was the first line, yeah. Mm. Quote, this is the second line, my sin, my soul...
Dracula? Scarlet Letter?
No, but you're in... I would say you're in the wheelhouse somehow.
Somehow.
Which one? Scarlet Letter's in the wheelhouse?
Somehow.
It's a book of great... Or a novel of great scandal.
Not Truman Capote.
Mm-mm. I will give away the title. The title appears in the first line if I gave it to you as the clue. The clue is the name of a person... And the first line is, the name of that person, Light of My Life. Nobody knows this one, huh?
Lolita?
It's Lolita. Oh. Yes, that's what it is. Nabokov's Lolita. Here's another second line. No, I am not a spook like those who haunted Edgar Allan Poe, nor am I one of your Hollywood movie ectoplasms. Also, I cannot give you the first line. It includes the entire title of the book.
They made a movie about it 5 years ago with... It's about a girl who is killed,
thief?
Right?
The Book Thief?
It's not The Book Thief.
That's what Jeff's talking about.
No.
Is it a John le Carré
yeah,
novel?
You are.
Mm-mm, it's not John le Carré. The author is R.E. are the initials.
Ralph Ellison.
Ralph Ellison. Yeah.
So it's
The Invisible Man.
The Invisible Man. That was yes, right. That's right. Not one of your Hollywood movie ectoplasms. That's a much better opening line than the actual first line, which is, I am an invisible man. Number five. However little known the feelings or views of such a man may be on his first entering a neighborhood, this truth is so well fixed in the minds of the surrounding families that he is considered as the rightful property of some one or other of their daughters.
Let's phone the audience.
I believe that... Yes.
Pride and Prejudice.
That's Pride and Prejudice. Yes. The first line is, it is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife.
A wife.
That is much more clear.
Yes.
Yes.
Jane Austen.
Score one for the Peanut Gallery.
Peanut Gallery one. Nice. Professors, some other number. Second line, that book was made by Mr. Mark Twain, and he told the truth mainly.
Huck Finn?
That's Huck Finn, yeah. That's actually the second line of Huck Finn, where the first line is, you don't know about me unless you have read a book by the name The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, but that ain't no matter. Huck Finn. I think this one is a little bit of a giveaway. Winston Smith, his chin nuzzled into his breast in an effort to escape the vile wind, slipped quickly through the glass doors of Victory Mansions, though not quickly enough to present a swirl of gritty dust from entering along with him.
1984.
Do you know off the top of your head, professors, what's the first line of 1984?
I've read that.
No.
It was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13. Mm-hmm. Enter dystopia. Okay, here's another one. In the first place, that stuff bores me. And in the second place, my parents would have two hemorrhages apiece if I told anything pretty personal about them.
Catcher in the Rye?
Yeah. Catcher in the Rye. Yeah,
sounds
very good. Yes.
Very angsty young boy.
Doesn't it sound that way? If you really want to hear about it, the first thing you'll probably want to know is where I was born and what my lousy childhood was like. Yes. Thank you, Salinger. A few more of these. These are actually pretty engaging, I gotta say. To begin my life with the beginning of my life, I record that I was born, as I have been informed and believe, on a Friday at 12 o'clock at night.
Oliver Twist?
No, but...
David Copperfield.
David Copperfield. One hop over. Yes, David Copperfield. The first line is...
After it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Yes.
Whether I shall turn out to be the hero of my own life, or whether that station will be held by anybody else, these pages must show. By Charles Dickens. Here we go. The war parts, anyway, are pretty much true. Second line. The war parts, anyway, are pretty much true.
It sounds like Hemingway, too.
It does sound like Hemingway, but it's not Hemingway.
The war parts.
I'm trying to think. I just read an article this morning that mentioned this very famous piece of American literature, and I can't give a good enough clue. What if I just said, so it goes? Well, I thought that was a giveaway. Folks, this is That's Slaughterhouse 5 by Kurt Vonnegut. Yes.
Oh, okay.
The actual first line is, all this happened, more or less. The war parts, anyway, are pretty much true. Yes.
Well, yeah.
That's how the book starts.
It's his own experience that led to the...
Mm-hmm. Second line, it was a special pleasure to see things eaten... To see things blackened and changed. This is good, Nat. I send us questions anytime. These are fantastic.
Can you read it one more time, please?
It was a special pleasure to see things eaten, to see things blackened and changed. Just think about burning stuff.
Is it Fahrenheit 451?
Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury, where the first line is the very simple, it was a pleasure to burn.
Mm-hmm.
Second line, whenever you feel like criticizing anyone, he told me, just remember that all people in this world haven't had the advantages that you've had.
To Kill a Mockingbird? No.
No, that's not To Kill a Mockingbird. You all are killing me here.
Read it one more time.
The Great Gatsby?
It's Great Gatsby, yes. Yes. Actual first line of The Great Gatsby by Fitzgerald is, "In my younger and more vulnerable years, my father gave me some advice I've been turning over in my mind ever since."
Nick. It's Nick.
Whenever you feel like criticizing anyone, just remember. I was going to go like a serious DiCaprio clue route, and I'm glad I didn't have to. But that movie was pretty good, though. Yeah. The classic meme. Do you know it by the memes? That's the question.
I do.
Quote, "Orbiting this at a distance of roughly 92 million miles is an utterly insignificant little blue-green planet whose ape-descended life forms are so amazingly primitive, they still think digital watches are a pretty neat idea."
Oh, Douglas Adams, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's so beautiful to hear it again. The actual first line is, "Far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun." Douglas Adams. We had a series of questions recently, you remember, professors, of high-profile folks who had passed during or right before the pandemic, and he was on that list. Mm. Douglas Adams. Very sad. A couple more of these, professors. Second line, "They were the last people you would expect to be involved in anything strange or mysterious, because they just didn't hold with such nonsense." Probably could figure this one out by context clues.
Read it one more time, please.
Absolutely. "They were the last people you would expect to be involved in anything strange or mysterious, because they just didn't hold with such nonsense."
Is it actually? No way, it's Harry Potter.
It is. It's Harry Potter, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer or Philosopher's Stone.
Huh. Book one? That's really the second line?
No, that's the second line. The first line is, "Mr. and Mrs. Dursley of number 4 Privet Drive are proud to say they were perfectly normal. Thank you very much."
That would be a bit too obvious.
That would have been a bit too obvious. I was going to cover up the name, see if you could get it. One more, professors, one more. "They soon know that they will grow up. And the way Wendy knew was this."
Peter Pan.
Peter Pan.
Yes.
Yep.
Do you know what the first line of Peter Pan is? That's a good one.
No, I don't.
"All children grow up. Except one."
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
The first line.
That would have been a dead giveaway.
Yes. Very well done. I mean, there was really only one that I thought.
Mark anyway.
You know, I'm giving full marks as far as I'm concerned. Full marks.
Yes.
You know, we received a question that sort of fits into the groove of our imponderables from one of our colleagues, Mary Catherine Harrison, who is, of course, a chair of English at Detroit Mercy. And she did not give us an answer. She hails from Ann Arbor, Michigan. "Do the professors think you can have music without any repetition?" And that sounds like a great time for one of you to talk for a minute so I can take a sip of water.
Yes, you can have music without repetition.
You think you can?
Yes.
Evidence.
All right, as a mathematician, the first thing I say is define repetition.
Well, true. But I would think repetition would have to be a sequence of at least.
Well, so there it is. What's the at least? If the at least is small enough, I would say no.
But isn't music just something with a melody?
Melody implies repetition, usually. Depends.
Without ever playing the same note?
Can you have repetition without music?
Well, if it means playing the same note, no, you can't, because there's only so many notes.
Now you can take the artist's perspective of saying that music is whatever people call music. Whatever you enjoy listening to is musical.
Yeah. I love it.
On a piano, you could play 80 notes, because there are 80 keys, without repeating any one of them. I wouldn't call that music.
But would it be good?
No, it
wouldn't
be music.
Where's Beth when you need her, or Dave Kuchel? We need some philosopher stat.
I think we're going in a metaphysical direction, but I've also noticed that my 13-year-old son was raising his hand just a minute ago. So, what's your answer?
All right.
Without repetition. So you would say it's okay. And this guy plays clarinet, so it's got to stand for something. I don't know what I would say about this. I feel like we're going to very quickly get into the, you know, music is in the eye of the beholder conversation, right?
Well, you could have a melodic tune that would have a lot of notes without repetition.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think so. Something about the, what is it, the electronic jazz age at the end of the 70s, early 80s? That would have been, sounds kind of chaotic sometimes, right? Okay, Professor, speaking of imponderables, you all know the way we have to end our shows.
With music.
First, we're going to let the golf cart drive by. Then, we're going to go to our list of imponderables. Dear Matt and professors, here's a new list of 20 imponderables, or favorites, whatever you like. I'm glad you've turned them into a semi-regular feature on the show, and it gives us an insight into what makes the professors tick. Some of the responses have been hilarious, others not so much.
Others just
I
others.
Added that part.
Just plain disturbing.
As always, warmest greetings from Valencia, California. It's Frank Burrows and family.
Thank you, Frank.
Okay. So this is pretty wide open. Let's chew on it for a while, shall we? The first thing on the list is favorite tradition. I don't even know where to begin. It could apply to anything. Could apply to anything. What's your favorite tradition? I got to say, to fill in the gap here, that at this time of year in the great state of Michigan, cider mills open up. And mostly, you can buy your pumpkins and your apples and things. And they sell cider, and for whatever other reason, they have donuts. And you go to most other states, even other Midwestern states, and they do not know what cider mill season is. It's very, very unique. Very unique. They might have a cider mill, but they don't think about it like we do at this time of year. That's one of my favorites.
I think for me it would have to do with Christmas. Maybe Christmas Eve would be the...
What specifically about Christmas Eve, Jim?
Well, gathering... Planning ahead, looking ahead, you know, going to some sort of service on Christmas Eve, but just getting together would be it.
The eggnog.
The eggnog.
The eggnog, yeah.
Or the Feast of Seven Fishes in my family. I'd say, you take one look at me, you'll know most of my favorite traditions involve food.
So, what would that be, Jeff?
Well, the Feast of Seven Fishes? Well, it varies, but for us, it's bacala, whitefish. A couple of different ways, shrimp a couple different ways, pasta with anchovies, I'm blanking now. There's a couple more.
Wow, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I would think food related too, like Thanksgiving turkey. I know in my family there was a suggestion at one point, only once, that we have something other than turkey for Thanksgiving. And it was a big brouhaha. And it was never mentioned after that point.
Is the bird fixed in a very specific way, Stephen?
No, you could vary that. You could vary the stuffing and whether this, you know, it's dressing or stuffing.
Dressing
you
or
could
stuffing.
Vary and what kind of bird you got, but it had to be turkey on Thanksgiving.
Of course.
You know,
of course.
You could vary some of the stuff. Never the gravy, but you know, it had to be turkey.
I have to ask, what was the suggestion to replace the Thanksgiving turkey?
Like, well, do we have to do it the same way every year? How about a ham or a something, and are you kidding? No.
I have some friends that Chinese food is the tradition on Thanksgiving.
Well, there you go.
So those relatives that were never heard from again.
they were the replacement for the turkey.
We tried deep fried turkey one time, and it was a hit.
Oh, that's a big deal.
It went over well.
That's a big deal.
Mildly dangerous, but delicious.
Goose did not. Venison did not.
Yeah, goose and venison feel more Christmassy, honestly.
I like the Christmas answers, but when I was a kid, every summer we'd have this big gathering of Macedonian people. There'd be like lambs on roasting on spits.
Yeah.
There'd be like good salad and lots of dancing and music. And that was one of my favorite things to do as a kid.
That's very cool. Was that around here?
That was up in Flint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Called it the Flint Picnic. It was great.
The gathering of the Macedonians.
All the Macedonians and good lamb.
Wow. Delish. I'm guessing a summer sort of thing?
It was a summer thing. Okay. Yep.
I'm kind of looking in Dan's direction, expecting him to fill in the gaps on the Italian side. No. But we actually heard from Jeff in the Seven Fishes.
As an adult, as a kid, I remember relatives doing that. But as an adult, no. I'm not a big fish person. But I got to go with Jim, like Christmassy, anything Christmassy. That was a tradition.
You're a Christmas guy.
I am.
It's okay. So nothing wrong with
you make
that.
Your pizzetta.
Wait, what?
What was that? Pizza. Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, fish bakes yeah. with Dan and, you know.
Pizza or something.
Leslie says fish bakes, Dan. It's
so that's different. Yes.
We were deprived of those in recent years, so we feel like we want to go back. Heather, we haven't heard from you yet. Are you going to break the food mold is the question.
Does an evening cocktail count as a tradition?
I think that that's a tradition.
Definitely.
Well, then I'll say that.
Okay, so what's your favorite cocktail?
Tell us more.
Martini.
And now just having past 4 p.m.
Yeah. I can't believe, Matt,
evening.
That decorating for Halloween is not your favorite
it
tradition.
It is. It's a very important tradition, but like fall, you know, sort of all together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Starts with Labor Day cider mills. So, yeah, you said a martini, Heather?
Absolutely.
And how do you make it?
Very dry.
Very, very dry.
Which means not much vermouth. Well, I'm being reminded that usually I don't make the martinis.
Oh.
But, yeah,
oh,
I like having martinis stuff. Made for me.
Yes.
You know, if you put enough olives in it, it's practically
what garnish do you like in yours?
Oh, olives.
Olives.
Yes.
And, of course, you stir yours. You don't shake them.
No, they're shaken.
Oh, they're shaken.
They are shaken,
okay.
not stirred. Yes.
Shaken, not stirred. Like,
yes,
just like
they
James
are
Bond.
Excellent. But it is a very significant treat to go out to dinner and actually have a martini out. Mm.
I think that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. It's a nice treat.
It was
treat.
Taken away from you and a lot of us for a very, very long time, right?
And actually, sometimes these are actually Vespers.
Well, the James Bond reference?
Yeah,
with the little shaving at 11. And
well, Vespers being technically being half gin and half vodka.
I see.
You that's said a Vespers.
Vesper, yeah.
Oh, okay. Because that means something very different to me, which is like a church service
yes.
on Saturday.
In the evening.
Right,
oh,
right.
The evening.
Right.
This is, that's no. Vespers.
Well,
yes.
One can get religious about this, as some people obviously do.
Well, isn't it true that originally that's what James Bond drank was
yes,
Vespers?
Yes,
yes, not
in one of the Ian Fleming novels.
Well, that is
and there
a
was
martini.
There was also to your point, shaken or stirred. There was one movie, and of course he was very particular about this. Bond was, but there was one of his movies. I forget which one, where he was in a particularly it was the aftermath of a particularly brutal altercation with the bad guy, and he goes to some bar and he says martini. The guy says shaken or stirred. And Bond, who was very particular about this his whole life, said, "Do I really look like I give a damn?" Well, that was the only time he was
the
not
only
insistent.
Time.
No,
huh?
That's because that was Casino Royale, which was the first one, so he wasn't particular yet.
Yeah.
And then there was another early one where he actually says the reverse. He wants it stirred.
This is just a long extended ad for the new James Bond movie coming soon to your local theater.
I think, you know, this weekend, I think. And it's his last one before he goes to...
Last
Before
for
he
Daniel
goes to
Craig.
Broadway to oh. play Macbeth.
That's right.
The leading
that's
role.
That's exactly right.
Anyway, I didn't mean to get us off of...
No,
you know,
I think that's fantastic.
But we do have to go now. And
yeah. No, not until 5 o'clock.
We have one more imponderable that was sent by Frank Burrows and his family, and I think it's going to give some pretty interesting responses. What's the favorite thing that you've seen happen at a wedding, or maybe something that was at a wedding, other than the couple itself... that you have actually liked. And I'll give you all the bumper time again to say that the tradition in my wife's family, which of course happened at my wedding, is that everybody gets really, really hungry about 10, 10:30. So a giant cart full of conies rolled out. And we ate again.
I have.
And so we've done that at all of our family weddings. So
that's amazing.
I think my favorite was at the rehearsal dinner we had a pig picking. It was in Eastern North Carolina.
A pig picking, oh.
And the truck came pulling the trailer with the pig cooker on there. And when the pig was done, you just came by with your fork and
oh, wow.
No,
wow.
It was excellent.
Now, they just do at a pig picking, do they just do the outsides or do they
barbecue
gut it first
the whole
and then
pig.
Do the boudin and the all the sausage stuff?
I don't know how much they removed first, but they roasted the whole pig in a cooker, a rolling cooker.
I've been dying to find out any place. Where can you get some good boudin around here? Blood sausage? I can't find it anywhere around here.
It's not a big one around here.
No.
Not a big one.
Try Ackroyd's Scottish Bakery.
Yeah, Ackroyd's would probably have it.
In Redford.
So? Yeah. They would definitely have it, I think.
Okay.
Go ahead, Dan.
So for me, it's the 10 o'clock thing again, except this person brought out a peanut butter and jelly sandwich bar, and she made all her own jellies. And invited people to have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
That's cool.
That was very different. But it was good.
And was it good bread?
And yes, I did have one. It was good bread. And good peanut butter, both crunchy and smooth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Depending on very which camp nice. You're in.
The favorite, my favorite thing I've ever seen at a wedding is actually my brother's wedding. And you know how the couple slices the cake. Well, the first thing I really loved was they started playing this music. And just as they go to cut the cake, you hear, "The first cut is the deepest." And then, when they go to serve each other the cake, my sister-in-law, who I love to death, takes her fork and feeds herself first.
Nice.
And I was like, that's nice. What I need.
Yes.
I went to a lovely wedding reception at Lake Tahoe. It was actually on the beach at Lake Tahoe. It was beautiful. So that's something I remember. Yeah.
Well, it was actually on the beach.
Yeah.
That's pretty beautiful.
Yeah. The Lake Tahoe, the color is just amazingly.
And the mountains.
And it was beautiful. Yeah.
Gorgeous. Have we heard from you yet, Jeff? I feel like we haven't.
Oh, I'm struggling to think of anything. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I keep looking over at the softball field. I know I got to disappear soon. I'm looking to see if they're going to warm up soon.
He's got to go disappear. Umpire again. You know, something else that I was thinking of, because I think at least a couple of the profs at the tables here might have had him for class at one point. So his name was Joe Fergal. He actually graduated a few years ago as a chemistry major. He's a professor of chemistry now at Bowling Green State University. But he was in my research lab, and a couple years after he graduated, he got engaged and got married.
To one of our most brilliant math majors.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. Allison Cullen, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm.
Great taste.
A math major from Detroit Mercy. Well, I wasn't able to go to his wedding. We were doing something. We were out of town. I don't remember. And it really killed me that I couldn't be there. So Mark Benvenuto went instead and had a really, really great time. And he came back the following Monday, and he's like, "Matt, I have to tell you about this wedding." I'm like, you know, Joe's just sort of an everyman. Like, what are you possibly going to say about what happened at this wedding? He goes, "Do you want to know what food they served?" Because this was a joke about
Mark
Joe. Was very
notice.
Sort of paleo. He was the kind of guy who would go order a hamburger and ask for only the patty. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. They served a mountain of breakfast for the dinner. It was only eggs and pancakes and waffles and everything at the wedding. And I go, now I really feel bad for missing that wedding. That's all I got to say.
That's awesome.
Sounded absolutely awesome. Something about breakfast for dinner always just hits right. Well, professors, I'm afraid the time has come for us to say goodbye. And we were glad we got to have you for the whole time, Jeff. That worked out very, very well. Very, very well. So why don't we all get our chance to say goodbye, Jeff.
Boats. Jeff Boats. 003.14159.
Steven.
Goodbye.
Heather.
Bye-bye.
Mara.
Goodbye.
Dan.
Goodbye.
And Jim.
Sayonara.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor today is transcribed on a small patch of grass outside the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mile.